show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Homer Demon and expel him from the confines of Kauffman Stadium. One can only hope.
Yeah, I don't know if you can count that, but we'll see. They may have opportunity to do it. So,
All right. Okay, bring it in. In 5, 4, 3. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, we took last week off. The Christmas hangover was in full swing, and New Year's was right ahead. And we thought, hey, we're gonna pass on the new show. I'm sure most of you were busy with family and friends, and if there were any of you that were just distraught that you couldn't ring in the new year with Mike and myself on the Kansas City Baseball Vault, I apologize for ruining your New Year's Eve.
So I would also say aim higher in your goals, because we do want you to listen to this, but we don't want you to do so at the expense of social life and other obligations.
Sage advice from the master himself, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this very cold, very winter-like, which is good because we're in winter,
right?
Midwestern evening.
Yeah, it's a lot better that it's wintry now than if it was like in August. Then something very terrible would probably happen. I'm exactly that. I'm cold. It's chilly. I record this like in a right by some windows, so it's a little just chilly over in this spot. But it's all right. I got a hoodie on. We're all good. It's nothing I can't handle. We'll play through it.
You're a tough man, Mike. You are
Yes, this is the standard for toughness.
The grit factor is high. It.
Yes,
in the podcasting world. But hey, I got a heater going right next to me, so I make no bones about it. The podcasting world is very. This is what passes for grit in that world.
It is like
yes,
it's pretty much record through it.
Yep, you record through it. Now, exactly. Speaking of. Recording through, I don't know. That was a bad segue. But we do have Royals things to discuss. The Royals made a move.
They
this
did.
This week. We, I'm not going to call us, high quality prognosticators. I'm not going to say that. But we did say there was a high probability of a move at the winter meetings, and it happened. And we did say that. After the kind of cool off period from the winter meetings, things will start to heat up again back in January. Boom, Royals making it. It's not a large scale. The Wade Davis move was big. Mm-hmm. This move, not a large scale move.
No.
But the Royals have traded for Peter O'Brien from the Arizona Diamondbacks, which is interesting. O'Brien was traded from the New York Yankees to the Diamondbacks a few years back in the Martin Prado trade. And he was deemed to be a solid building block for the Diamondbacks, something that they could use for the future. And they were kind of in rebuilding mode. Seems like the Diamondbacks, one of those like San Diego Padres type teams, is just always in like a perpetual state of semi rebuilding. They never want to fully commit to it. And same with the Padres, and the White Sox are kind of in that mold as well.
Right.
Although the White Sox are damn close
now. They're pretty much in it now. Yeah, they finally have committed to a side.
But you'll have the Diamondbacks, and you'll be like, okay, they're going young. They're trying to, you know, to build through the farm system. And then they go out and they spend $210 million on Zach Greinke, $217 million, whatever.
Yeah, it's not really a rebuilding move.
So it's like, well, now is this really rebuilding here? So they're kind of weird in that manner. But anyway, they had Peter O'Brien. They decided that they wanted to trade him. So, you know, who comes calling but the Kansas City Royals? And well, I don't know how it worked, to be honest with you. I don't know if it was, I don't know if the Royals called and said, hey, is this guy available? Or if they called, or if the Diamondbacks, you know, specifically really wanted. Oh, crap. I'm trying to blank.
Sam Lewis is the guy. Yeah. Tells you all you kind of need to know. I mean, not to disparage Sam Lewis, who actually had a pretty good year in A-ball, but you know, A-ball pitchers do they do replenish fairly quickly and easily.
Yes. To be honest, I had not heard the name before he was traded. That was just why I drew a blank just now trying to call the name.
Didn't know much about him either.
And regardless, the Diamondbacks apparently thought there was something there enough to deal Peter O'Brien, who was a you know, decently regarded prospect. So there it is. Now, the question is, where does O'Brien fit, if anywhere, on the Royals Major League roster? And Mike, why don't you go ahead and kind of break it down for everybody, like what we can expect from Peter O'Brien and, you know, where he might fit in.
Well, he's interesting in that he is extremely a power hitter. You just look at, you look at a couple of highlights, and I checked a couple of highlights after the trade, and my gosh, the ball explodes off of his bat. But like a lot of players of that type, the issue isn't necessarily how far he can hit it, how hard he can hit it, it's can he hit it. And he's very much a strikeout-prone player. Just kind of looked back over a few brief scouting report profiles from Baseball Prospectus and Baseball America and whatnot. They all point to the same thing, the long swing. He's prone to high velocity. You know, he struggles against that, struggles against good breaking stuff. And so there are questions about how well he can hit at the big league level. If you just look at a small sample size of parts of two seasons in 2015 and 2016 with Arizona, he got about 79 plate appearances and struck out 40% of the time. Not great. Not great at all. You know, just looking at the Royals, they struck out 20% of the time in 2016, and that was a jump from, you know, the year before in 2015. So I saw somebody, and I should have this jotted down, but it was a tweet. I retweeted it yesterday. He said Peter O'Brien is the most non-Royals type of player you can find, because he's a former catcher who got moved to the outfield but is probably going to play some first base. Doesn't really play very good defense. He's huge. He's like 6'4", 235.
Big guy.
He's like a linebacker, basically. You know, and they just got Jorge Soler, and they have Hunter Dozier, and all those guys are 6'4 and 2 something. So, I mean, there's not going to be any beanball wars this year, I don't think. Those guys are going to be a pretty big force. But he can hit homers. I mean, he hit 6 homers in 36 games in a kind of big league tryout. He hit 34 homers in 2014, 26 in 2015. And, you know, it's huge power. But that's the thing is, he's on a National League team and he doesn't have a fielding position. And so, you know, the Diamondbacks said that they designated him for assignment. They said that they wanted to be more flexible at defensively. They have a full outfield of guys who can play. So he ended up being the odd man out. And I read an article that said that the Royals were interested in trading for him last year late. And, you know, they kind of were rebuffed and told that O'Brien wasn't going to be available. And so that kind of laid the groundwork, I guess, now for where he was designated for assignment. The Diamondbacks were able to get a pitching prospect with some promise or at least a lottery ticket and move a guy that they weren't going to have a spot for. So I think Dayton Moore, or maybe it's just speculated, that he's going to get an opportunity to play DH, which from the sounds of it, probably fits his profile. Kind of write up on him from the 2016 Baseball Prospectus Annual compared him catching, or at least the experiment of making him try to catch in spring training, to the Milgram experiment involving, you know, shock treatments and stuff. And that it's, you know, the pain of subjecting someone to the shock treatments is the same as O'Brien. I don't know who wrote the profile, so but I mean, it, from the sounds of it, and I haven't really seen him in the field, so I'm just going off of other people's observations. Sounds of it, he's not going to be a guy who's going to play a lot of defense. If he's in the outfield, somebody got hurt or you're getting blown out or something bad has happened. So, you know, that's kind of where the Royals are at. But he does offer just extreme power. I mean, he can hit the ball a mile. And I think he won the home run derby in AAA last year, the year before. You know, just prolific, like top of the scale raw power. But again, the question is going to be, can he actually make contact with the ball? You know, this is a guy who struck out 692 times as a professional in 615 games. So that's very unroyal like. And so that's interesting to see. But, you know, the Royals didn't give up much for him. If he pans out, there's a lot of upside. And if he doesn't, it's probably someone that they can cut the cord on pretty quickly. And I think he has at least one option left. So if he has to go back to the minors, he can definitely do so. And there's probably another team somewhere who, you know, he's only 26 years old. They would probably trade something of value for him. Not great value, probably on par with what the Royals gave up.
Sam Lewis.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting. I'm kind of interested to see what happens and if it turns into, you know, a player that the Royals can actually get, you know, 20, 25, 30 home runs from, or is he going to be somebody in the mold of Calvin Pickering and Craig Brazel and guys like that who, you know, have these really huge reputations as power hitters in the minors and never panned out at all once they actually made it to the big leagues. But you know, it's an interesting move, and the Royals have a opportunity at DH. They, you know, O'Brien is going to be, he's only played 36 games in the big leagues, so he's got plenty of service time left. He's well below arbitration eligible, so he's going to be at the league minimum. So there's not a lot of risk other than the opportunity you might give somebody else at DH, like a Chester Cuthbert or you know, Hunter Dozier or whomever. So, you know, if it's something where he comes out and he hits 10 homers in spring training, he probably opens the day as the DH in the lineup. And if he doesn't, if he strikes out a bunch, he's probably in Omaha and someone else is going to DH. And then you just kind of see what happens. So, you know, it's I keep using the word interesting because that's just what it is. It's like, okay, you know, it's the kind of move that the Royals are kind of trying to be sneaky with, sneak a guy off the NL roster who can't DH there and see if they can find a spot for him in their lineup. So it's certainly inspired by, you know, going for the upside there, and it's an easy bail if he doesn't hit. So I don't think there's much downside really in this move, unless Sam Lewis goes on to develop into an ace in a few years. But, you know, there was nothing to indicate that was going to happen. So not really worried about it.
Yeah. And, you know, you said interesting
about eight times.
I don't want to just repeat what you're saying, but you know, it's, you make a good point simply because, you know, one of the articles I read, they described it as, you know, the Royals have grabbed themselves a lottery ticket, and the Royals have kind of made their business, if you will, on doing this. Mostly they do it from a pitching standpoint, specifically relief pitching, and they've cashed it in for some good returns. in recent years. And so now I think they're kind of trying their hand at that from an offensive standpoint. You know, they've got Rose of never outright, I shouldn't say never, rarely outright go for power. I think moves like getting Jose Guillen and Mike Jacobs back, you know, in the 2000s, late 2000s, those were kind of direct power moves, but that was also kind of a listless, like, we got to do something. We're not quite ready yet, but we got to do something type moves. And so that's how they went. But, you know, since this, this, you know, focus of this window, if you will, you know, the athlete, the good, you know, around the bases, good defense, that kind of a thing. They haven't really just gone in for direct power. It seems Moose maybe kind of is the most borderline call, but he was, as far as just really going for the power move. But so it seems like, you know, maybe they're kind of changing their stance on that, trying to catch up a little bit to the rest of the league, especially after seeing the home run explosions again from last year, you know, in getting Jorge Soler and now possibly Peter Ryan, which, you know, maybe it's just nothing. Maybe it was just a guy like, hey, you know, maybe he's Adam Dunn and, you know, maybe he's Keila Kaiahue, you know, who knows?
Right.
Anywhere in between seems reasonable, honestly. So, you know, if they, again, lottery ticket is the best way to describe it. If they cash it in, then it's great. You've got a guy who can probably net you 25, 30 home runs. Maybe he hits 230, and you know, he'll DH and or play below average defense in right field, or you know, or you got somebody that never makes it to the majors and you just send them on their way, and it's, you know, thanks for stopping by.
Yeah. Nice try.
Hey,
at least you know, tried.
Good luck next time around, sir. But you know, so with Peter O'Brien in mind, we, you know, there's still, we've kind of talked about it before, they're just kind of filling in the margins a little bit, if you will. You know, the lineup is mostly set, and they're just kind of filling in the margins, covering their gaps, maybe making some slight possibilities for competition in spring training, you know. So from your perspective, Mike, how do you think the lineup now, knowing these couple of moves that they've made, how do you think everything's going to shake out for the Royals as we move now into just a few weeks away, honestly, from pitchers and catchers reporting?
Well, I just kind of jotted something down, and really, you know, Ned Yost is pretty predictable in his lineups. He likes to alternate the handedness. He likes Escobar at the top. You know, you have a sense of who's going to go where. So, I, you know, if we assume that O'Brien does make the team, and I would assume that Merrifield plays at second, it could be Mondesi. I kind of have it going Escobar, Moose, Kane, Hosmer at cleanup, Sal Perez behind him, Alex Gordon next, and then Jorge Soler, and then Peter O'Brien, and then either Merrifield or Mondesi, whoever the second baseman is, doesn't really matter. It could be Christian Colon for all we know. I mean, any of those guys are pretty much going to be number nine hitters. Maybe you try one of those, you know, maybe Merrifield or Mondesi at the top of the lineup and switch them with Escobar. But basically, you know, for guys like Soler and O'Brien, they struck out so much. You know, Soler struck out 25% of the time last year, 27.6 for his career. O'Brien struck out 27% of the time in the minors. You know, the Royals last year as a team struck out 20% and only 16% the year before. So I don't think that they want to necessarily, I mean, maybe they wouldn't stack those two behind each other just because you don't want to have, you know, two non-productive outs if they do strike out. But at the same time, bottom of the lineup, what else are you going to do? You know, it also assumes O'Brien does, you know, make the team, or that they don't acquire somebody else. Kind of leaves Chesler Cuthbert out, Paulo Orlando, Jarrod Dyson, some of those guys. You never know where they're going to end up. You know, so I don't know. That's kind of the initial thought that I would have on where they would put those guys. If it turns out that it works out, you know, you might have, you know, the league minimum plus, what, $3.3 million for Soler. so you're less than $4 million. You might be able to get 50 home runs out of those two guys, or you might get hardly anything. You know, or the Royals might go sign somebody else, or they might trade for somebody else. You never know. But right now, I couldn't see them putting O'Brien very high in the lineup, and I think Soler, unless he has a good spring, probably doesn't hit very high. You know, obviously they trust Sal Perez. They know Sal Perez. Ned Yost loves Sal Perez, and he's just continues to hit more homers every year. So he's probably going to stay in the middle of the lineup. And Alex Gordon's not going to get turfed down too far, I can't imagine. Mike Moustakas hit capably at the number two spot in 2015 and had a good year last year to start off before he got hurt. So I can't imagine that they're going to be taking these new guys and putting them into central parts in the lineup. But, you know, if they play well, they could certainly bump up. I mean, you could see one of those guys protecting Hosmer in the lineup. You know, you could switch it around and maybe put Gordon after Soler. I mean, but I can't see either of them doing much outside of the bottom third, bottom half of the lineup until, you know, they kind of maybe catch fire or something. But, you know, that's one way to at least kind of, you know, you limit their plate appearances somewhat that way, but you also kind of limit their exposure in a way as well. You know, for two guys who could be prone to very good pitchers, you know, you're at least kind of leaving yourself an opportunity to have guys who will make fewer outs higher in the lineup, and those guys can be at the back of the lineup with some upside before the lineup turns around. So that's my initial kind of hunch on it. I don't think it changes that much depending on who actually ends up at DH or if they swap guys around in the outfield or whatever. You know, the core guys of Kane, Hosmer, Moustakas, Sal, Gordon, those are probably going to be your 2 through 6 types, your, you know, maybe 3 through 7 or something if they switch it up. You know, it's Ned Yost. You know, he's not Bob Boone. He doesn't have a new lineup every day. He has basically the same lineup with one or two subs on any given day, unless things are going wrong, and then he panics and put Escobar at the top. But I can't imagine they would too much to rely on O'Brien or Soler right out of the gate unless they really take to the majors in the American League and manage to hit. Maybe you bump either of them up if they're facing a lefty. O'Brien has pretty strong splits and really strong numbers against left-handers. So that could be an option if you bumped him up to maybe bat higher, especially if he's hitting well. But initially, I can't see them using them as central figures in the lineup, more along the lines of you get what you get and see what you can produce from the bottom of the lineup.
Yeah, and, you know, the saddest, I pretty well agree, and the saddest part about that makes it is not, you know, the predictability of someone like Alcides Escobar probably hitting leadoff yet again. I mean, there's a legitimate case to be made.
Esky leadoff magic.
For that's not the legitimate case I was going to say to make.
Oh, sorry.
But there's a legitimate case to be made that Alcides Escobar was the worst everyday player offensively in the majors in all of 2016. So
you're telling me a guy who doesn't hit for great average, doesn't walk, and doesn't have any power is a bad everyday hitter?
It's shocking. Shocking, I know. But so, you know, that is incredibly disheartening when you look at it that way.
Yeah.
You see, oh, great. Now we've got, you know, Escobar leading off. But and especially if the Royals are going more towards a power-driven lineup, you know, you saw Eric Hosmer hit his 25 home runs last year, but his batting average dipped from 2015. He was in the 295 range in 2015, 297 in 2015, and 266 last year. So, you know, essentially, or you could, you know, just based on the numbers alone, and of course what we saw with our eyes, you could say with decent confidence that Hosmer kind of sold out a little bit for some more power. You know, his batting average dropped almost four. Or I'm sorry, his on base percentage dropped almost 40 points, and you know, his power numbers went up. So, you know, it's not a stretch to say the Royals are kind of might be shifting slightly towards that. You know, especially then if you've got a, you know, possible, you know, Hosmer, Soler, Perez, Moose, O'Brien kind of order through the lineup there. I mean, you're looking at a, you know, in any of those that group in any order, you know, those that would be a lot of power in there, but you know, also a lot of strikeouts, a lot of swing and miss, a lot of things like that going on. So, you know, it's if you're leaning towards that direction as a team, which is fine, you know, but if that's the way you want to go, then you putting someone like Alcides Escobar, who is all of the swing and miss with none of the power.
Yeah.
Putting him hitting before those people, that's bad for business, man. You know, it's just you're not putting yourself in a position to succeed, because then you're you know, if he's an out 78% of the time or whatever it would end up being, and or 75% of the time being an out, and then you know, you not only do you have an out which decreases the batting average just statistically speaking, but then you've got nobody on base. You know, the idea would be to have more people on base. Mm-hmm. And Escobar has not shown consistently enough the ability to get on base. So it's kind of an interesting way to look at it, to see what are the Royals really gunning for here. Because it's clear that they want to compete in 2017. They know the window is basically closed after that year.
Yep.
And this year now, I can say that.
Yeah, that's
just, after this true. Year. after this year, and so they've still got an eye. You know, it's if they're 90% focused on 2017 and trying to close out this window with the bang, there's still that 10% that's focused on looking forward. That's why a trade like Soler made sense. You know, he's locked up well past 2017. They've got him for a little while. So what direction is that team going? The post 2017 Royals, what direction will that team be going? And this move, as for another young player with a lot of power and, you know, below average defense, could be getting a little taste of, you know, not necessarily saying the Royals want a team full of mashers that can't play defense, but just the idea that, you know, the future, the post 2017 Royals might be valuing power a little bit more than the current version does. I mean, does that make sense at all?
Mm-hmm. Or am I just... No, it does. And it's, you know, whenever Dayton Moore talks about that kind of stuff, you know, most teams, they want to find guys who have good on base ability and guys who have good power and guys who could throw in the mid 90s, upper 90s off the mound and stuff. And those guys are difficult to acquire. I mean, those are, you know, it makes total sense. You know, you want a guy who can get on base a lot. Well, obviously that guy's going to have a lot of value to him. Same with someone who can hit the ball out of the ballpark often, guy who can throw hard, all of that. And so if the Royals can't develop it, they have to get it somehow. And so in that way, I think Soler and O'Brien are kind of opportunistic acquisitions, because O'Brien is as cheap as you can get with the potential for a lot of home runs and a lot of power. He's very flawed, though. I mean, you brought up Jose Guillen and Mike Jacobs, and they were really flawed, too. But the difference was that the Royals gave up a lot more for both of those guys. Well, Wade Davis is pretty big, but it wasn't even that, like, you're getting a surefire power hitter. It's not like you're going out and getting, you know, Adam Dunn, who was good for 40 homers every year for, like, 10 years, basically. This is, you know, Brian might hit 5. He might hit 35. You don't know. You know, it could go either way. But you're not giving up much. It's just the opportunity to get that kind of power into your system and into your franchise. And he's, you know, they've got plenty of time after this year to see if he can work it out. And if he doesn't, you know, you cut bait. It's not really anything that they're committed too much to until maybe his second or or his last year of arbitration, where he might start getting expensive. But at the same time, if he does that, if he gets expensive in arbitration, it means he's probably hitting the ball out of the ballpark because he's, you know, still on the Royals. He's still on the team. So, you know, it's a lot of upside in that. And Soler's in a similar kind of boat in that, you know, he does become arbitration eligible, but, you know, he wouldn't opt in if he's not hitting well enough to earn that kind of a pay raise every year going forward. So it's, you know, kind of shrewd. It's, you know, it may turn out to be nothing. So there may be nothing more than an average hitter. O'Brien may never show up, but you know, Soler was one of the top five prospects in the Cubs system for a long time. That's a talented system. Mm-hmm. O'Brien was a, you know, was as recently as 2 years ago was a top 10 kind of prospect in the Diamondback system. And it's just a matter of, are they going to hit enough? And so those are kind of the moves that the Royals have to make in this spot because they don't have the payroll flexibility to go sign most of these guys, or they have to trade someone and they don't have as much ammunition in the farm system to go out and trade for guys because, you know, 2 years ago they got Johnny Cueto and Ben Zobrist and a lot of that value is gone. So it's these are the kind of moves they have to kind of take a chance at and see how they pan out. And especially for a year like this, where those guys don't have to be the driving forces, they can be complementary players. That probably benefits them too. And then you look at where they are next year. Like you said, they're kind of looking to the future as well. You know, maybe these guys are batting fourth and fifth next year when everybody takes off for free agency. If they're hitting well, that could be really fun. If they're not, it could be really, really frustrating.
It could be like Jose Guillen.
It could be where Mike Jacobs, for a long time, me and my friend called him the trash man because he never hit a home run in a game that wasn't, you know, outside of 6-run deficit either way. Just yeah. So basically garbage time. It's like, oh, you hit a home run. What's the score? Oh, they're up 7. Yep. Sounds about right. It's not doing that in the 2-run games. I don't know if it's true or not. I never went back to look at it, but that's what we called him.
Weren't many 2-run games back in those days.
That's true too. That's a fair point. 2009 was some rough years.
I do remember going to a game that year. Sorry to interrupt, but just and seeing we were sitting on the first base side, kind of halfway in between first base and home plate, and so we had, you know, Jose Guillen who's batting and hit a home run, you know, towards that bullpen over there. And I mean, he just flipping crushed it, like just destroyed that baseball. And I mean, I just remember, cause you know, it was like almost perfectly in line with where we were sitting. And I just like, it just zoomed off his bat and just was like halfway up the hill back when they still had that hill up there, mm-hmm. you know? And, it was like, man, those moments you kind of were reminded why, okay, this was a guy worth acquiring. And then he would go and be a jackass and he would disappear for the next 25 games and not do anything. And then you're like, oh, okay, this is why he kind of sucks.
This is why he's awful. Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt.
But. No, that's Mike Jacobs too. I mean, it's just those aren't great players. So,
no.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, Nick Cafardo from the Boston Globe said that the Royals might have some interest in Pedro Alvarez, who's a lefty. He's hit 30 homers in a year before. Drafted ahead of Eric Hosmer in the same draft. So that he might be out there. He's probably about $6 million acquisition. You know, that could be an option if they wanted to platoon a lefty and a righty and O'Brien. You know, maybe combined, maximizing the matchups, you get 40 homers out of them at a 1DH spot, like you were talking about before we started recording. Can we count that to beating Balboni? Maybe. I would say, I mean, they wouldn't count it that way, but I think in our hearts and minds, we could see it that way.
In our hearts and minds, we could definitely do it.
The DH spot did it. So I don't know. I mean, those guys are interesting to see how they go. There's also to transition. Matt Adams is someone the Royals have been tied to as far as trade talks at different points, even back into the winter meetings, but recently. So he's someone the Cardinals have been looking to move. He's a lefty, similar kind of thing where he might be someone they would platoon with O'Brien. The Royals generally, you know, for a team that has said that they want to do a rotating DH and use that as an opportunity to get guys days off or half days off, or, you know, to not settle on one guy to be the DH, you know, to have two guys rotate only by whoever the starting pitcher is a little unusual for them. But, you know, Matt Adams has been a pretty decent hitter, you know, at least a little above average over the years. You know, he's had some injury problems, but they've been connected to him, at least as far as rumors go. You know, he's 28 years old right now. I don't, you know, he's a big dude as well. 6'3", 260 is what he's listed at. So I don't know. The Royals might just be going out and trying to get guys who can play line and send him across the tunnel to the Chiefs and see what happens. But I don't know. It's but you know, the thing about Matt Adams, like, I just worry that he's like a Billy Butler time bomb ready to go off, and not in the good way, in the plummeting kind of way. Billy Butler, his decline started after his age 27 season. So that would be in the same time frame as Matt Adams, and Matt Adams hasn't had as good of a peak. And so, you know, guys like that, you know, with the big bulky body type like that, just don't age well in baseball. They just, you know, they break down faster. It's anecdotal to a point, but there have been some studies that have kind of looked at that. And, you know, Adams is the kind of guy that would worry me from that kind of standpoint. You know, so I'm not really a big fan of him. And you'd have to trade talent for him. I would much rather just invest the money in Alvarez if the Royals were going to actually go on a strict platoon between O'Brien and some left EDH. Rather than trade, and, you know, Matt Adams is fairly inexpensive from a payroll standpoint, but, you know, I would still rather go for someone who seems like more of a productive hitter than to trade for someone who I think is not really that that promising. But that's another route the Royals could take, and that could change a lot of the matchups, and the lineup might shift depending on the pitcher. So you could see that, and that would also accomplish the goal of O'Brien not getting exposed to really good pitchers. You know, you could always throw in a different, you know, player at DH, give him a day off, and see what happens. So, you know, a lot of directions they can go. I'm not sure if any of those other routes, Alvarez or Adams, if those are, you know, likely, but they've been brought up, so it's not out of the question at this point.
Yeah, and you know, with the Adams thing, you know, especially the way it's being brought up, meaning, you know, who would be traded for, and there's no confirmed linkage between this idea, but people have kind of connected the dots a little bit, and they, you know, there have been mutual interests in the past of the Cardinals possibly being interested in Jerod Dyson, Royals probably possibly being interested in Matt Adams. And it's like, hey, you know, both teams are right in the market for these types of players. And so somebody tries to play armchair GM and kind of supposes or proposes a possible trade like that. And so we kind of had some discussion, you know, with the amongst the BP Kansas City guys today, and about this, you know, whether or not we would do it, and what it would mean for the Royals and the repercussions. And, you know, the main one being, Paolo Orlando gets a lot more playing time with Dyson gone, and all these types of things. And, you know, to varying degrees, we all kind of came to this similar conclusion that, and we've said it before on the show, you know, that Dyson is more valuable to this team being the Royals, than he is to any other team, even a team like the Cardinals, you know, is, and, you know, I think Dyson has value to every team that he would be on. You know, I think he's reached that point where every team would see him as a valuable player, but he would definitely fit into more some teams better than others. And I don't think his value, and I'm not even necessarily talking just straight statistics here, but I'm not saying that his WAR would be higher on the Royals than it would be on any other team, but just with the way he fits in to the team, I guess if you wanted to think of it in statistical terms, I guess you could, you know, if you're to talk win expectancy, you know, you could say that he bumps up the win expectancy, just having that in your pocket, a player like Jerod Dyson, whether he's starting the game and, you know, he's able to get on multiple times and maybe steal a few bases, or you can bring him in late as a pinch runner and defensive replacement, you know, whatever the case may be. And it, just the way this team is structured, I think he fits in better. And plus the value he brings as a clubhouse leader and so forth makes him more valuable on the Royals than any other team. That said, if you can get something really good for him, you know, then definitely right. worth considering. I don't know if Matt Adams is that guy, is the only thing. And, you know, I would lean towards probably not, especially for, you know, exactly what you said. You know, he's a bigger guy, and, you know, how do bigger guys age? The answer is not all that well. So I don't know, you know, it's not, I mean,
yeah, the argument that Clint Scholes was bringing up, and he was the biggest proponent of, yeah, Adams for Dyson, I'm okay with that, was that you're trading 1 year of Dyson, who's a part-time player, you have some guys who could fill in for him to some extent, depending on how you feel on Paolo Orlando. I'm not that comfortable with Orlando filling in the same role, but I don't think Orlando's like a useless player. But I'm like you. I just don't like Adams that much. And I feel like there are other opportunities where if you're going to trade Dyson, you could get better return for Dyson than a hitter that you know, I don't like. Now, doesn't matter if I like him or not. It matters if Dayton Moore likes him or not. And Adams does have a couple more years of team control, to where, you know, this year I think he's probably projected for like $3 million. Next year maybe $7 to $8 million in arbitration. So he's not really expensive on a payroll sense either. So that's a plus as well. And if he can give you league average production or better, then that's great. But at the same time, you know, he doesn't play great defense. He's basically a first baseman DH type. You know, doesn't stay healthy usually. He's missed games every year. And, you know, some years, you know, 2 years ago, he pretty much tanked. You know, he had 60 games, but he hardly hit at all. Last year, he didn't hit very well. You know, his average has been in the 240s the last 2 years after being in the 280s in 2013 and 2014. So that's not promising either. And, you know, I don't know that you want to give up a guy who's got value like Dyson, especially to a team that is constructed the way the Royals are, where they want to try to make it, you know, they want to try to win those one run games, and Dyson's a huge weapon in those kind of situations that Adams wouldn't be. On the other hand, if they are going for this kind of lean towards power, which it's not like a stated goal, but it seems like the guys they've been interested in have been more power hitters. You know, Adams could kind of figure into that, but I can't commit to feeling comfortable enough in Orlando to make that deal. Just, I don't think he's as good defensively. I don't think he's as good a base runner. He does have more power than Dyson, so that would be one thing. But I think Dyson is he's just a good baseball player, and I think he's a better baseball player than Orlando. And, you know, neither of them are very expensive, so you know, that's why, to me, I would rather, like I said, I would rather sign Pedro Alvarez for $6 million, get probably better production than you would from Matt Adams, and you get to keep Dyson. You know, I don't know what that does, again, to Cuthbert or Dozier or Orlando or any of those guys, but, you know, if that makes the potential to have, you know, any guy in your DH spot, either Alvarez or O'Brien, hit a 440-foot home run, well, I think that's worth trying. You know, and if you can keep Dyson as your late game specialist, or have him fill in center for, you know, a game a week for Lorenzo Cain, I think that's valuable too. So it's, you know, I think that's a better overall net gain from using your roster than trading Dyson for Adams. if that's even proposed. It does make sense. I mean, if you know the Wade Davis and Jorge Soler trade kind of worked out the same way, where the Cubs are interested in Wade Davis, the Royals are interested in Jorge Soler, and it's like, you know, every writer out there basically had that, you know, targeted as that's going to be the move, and it turned out to be that was the move. And this kind of has that similar kind of, it's kind of like the Will Myers and James Shields trade was pretty much the same thing. Oh, the Royals have this young top prospect, and they want top of the line starting pitching, and the Rays have this top of the line starting pitcher, and they want young position players with team control. Perfect. You know, it's you got your chocolate and my peanut butter and my chocolate thing. It's, you know, it matches up, and it makes sense. So I wouldn't be surprised if that happened either, but I also would not prefer it. So if they consult me, which I'm sure that they will.
These are negotiable, folks.
Right. I'm just going to get a random call. It'll be the ticket office, and they're still going to ask me. I would say I don't want to do that move. I could see why the Royals would, I guess, is where it comes down to.
Yeah, and I think the biggest part for me, you hit on directly, where, you know, when you're talking about Matt Adams, he's a first base DH type. So, you know, I think the idea would be, and we talked earlier, you know, about the 90-10% eye towards the future. The idea would be keeping that eye towards the future because, you know, the Royals have a couple possible first basemen in the, you know, in their system now, but nothing, no, like, surefire, that's the guy who's going to replace Eric Hosmer in 2018. So Matt Adams would definitely kind of fill that role. But for 2017, you're kind of stuck where, you know, they're moving away essentially by not re-signing Kendrys Morales, moving away from the DH-only player in favor of having flexibility in that role. But if you have Matt Adams on your team, you trade Jerod Dyson for him, you've lost that flexibility because you're trading Dyson because you want a guy like Adams in your lineup every day. And when you put him in that lineup every day and Eric Hosmer's playing first base, you know, you're going to stick Adams in right field? No, you're not going to do that. So you're going to put him at DH and you're going to not have that flexibility that you've seemingly been craving for the last couple of years. You know, that was the people thought, oh, well, the Royals are, they're going to let Billy Butler go because they want that flexibility, and they signed Kendrys Morales. And now that Morales is gone, you know, Dayton Moore even admitted in some interviews that they want to look towards that role. So, you know, and again, this is nothing concrete on any of this rumor, not even close to it. You know, just kind of a putting it out there in the ether. But as you said, you know, it was kind of whispered about for the Davis Soler trade a little bit before. So, you know, sometimes when there's smoke, there actually is fire. And who knows in this case, it remains to be seen. But I think for me, that's the major issue that I would grapple with, is that you lose a lot of that flexibility, especially with Moose coming off of his injury and, you know, Kane and all of his injury history and, you know, Gordon having his injury last year. And Soler just having the suspect defense, and Salvador Perez wanted to keep him fresh. Yeah. But between all of those things,
a lot of concerns.
Yes, a lot of concerns, and a lot of value in doing that flexible DH model that they're kind of looking towards. But if you take that, away, you lose that. If you were to acquire Matt Adams in some fashion, and you know, while I actually agree that, you know, I would love if they had said, hey, the $6 million we saved by trading Wade Davis for Jorge Soler, we're going to go pay that to Pedro Alvarez. We're going to take him. And, you know, I do agree. He's definitely not going to give you worse production than Matt Adams. They may end up being, you know, kind of a wash, but with the opportunity of being better, pretty good opportunity, mm-hmm. I would think, to give you better offensive production. But again, you would find in the same problem because he's not taking Moose's job at third base.
Nope.
He's not taking Hosmer's at first base. So, and his only issue, or his only possibility is the DH. And again, you're losing. I think you feel a little bit more comfortable with that, just because with him as your DH, just because I think the ceiling for production is higher, so you're going to get more value out of it. So I do agree that of the two choices, if we're living in a world where those are the two possible moves left to make for the Royals, you know, I think Alvarez makes more sense in the immediacy. I actually think Matt Adams might make more sense in the long run if you think it's, you know, with his body type and everything, if you think it's sustainable having a first baseman, you know, as opposed to having a third baseman beyond 2017, where they've already got two legitimate candidates there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that makes a little bit more sense. But in baseball, more than any other sport, you never worry about log jams at positions. If you got too many, you can, you know, it's much easier to change a position for somebody. Or, you know, Alvarez has spent some time at first base even, so you could put him over there, you know, or you could trade one of your, you know, a Dozier or a Cuthbert or something like that. So, you know.
They find a way to make it work out.
Yes, much more so in baseball than any other sport, really. So.
Yeah, if they can find a way to hide Kyle Schwarber in left field in Chicago, they can find a way to make these at bats kind of work out. And so yeah, so you know, it is what it is, I suppose. So I don't know what they're gonna do, but and they may do nothing. They may just go with this and see what happens and try to ride out the team that they have right now and go from there. You know, they did add a little bit in the bullpen. They added Bobby Parnell, from former Met, used to be their closer, had a couple really good years from 2010 to 2013. Then he ran into Tommy John surgery and hasn't been the same since. But he reportedly
ran into Tommy John surgery.
Go
at the local market, actually. Hey, Tommy John surgery. I haven't seen you in a while.
Why do I? Oh,
that's funny that I see you here. I was just about to pay you a visit. Oh, really?
Now I can't work for 18 months.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
So, you know, we'll see what happens there. But, you know, he's in the mold of the Ryan Madsen types, you know, where he's got a track record of solid production. And, you know, he reportedly has been around 94 miles an hour, where he was thrown in the, you know, kind of mid-upper 90s in his heyday. And so you'll see what comes out of that. He may or may not do much of anything, but, you know, he used to be a pretty solid producer as a reliever. And if you're only asking him to maybe give you 45, 50 innings this year in low leverage situations, he could probably do it. So we'll see how he throws. He's had some other moments where, you know, he pitched like six games with the Tigers last year and didn't really do that well. But, you know, the farther you get from that Tommy John, or at least, you know, if you're 18 to 2 years out, and now he's going to be about three, you're a lot better off. So that's a plus. And another guy they signed was Jonathan Sanchez, who we all remember from his ill-fated
days in 2012. Jonathan Sanchez.
That Jonathan Sanchez hasn't pitched in the majors since 2013. Last time he was seen in a Royals uniform, he was given up a better than two whip, walking like eight batters per nine innings
or
something.
That's hard to do.
That is really
greater than two whip. Like, that's, you almost have to actively try to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. With big league defenders behind you. Yeah. 7.76 ERA. Of course, he was traded to Colorado for Jeremy Guthrie, and Guthrie had, you know, good year and a half of pretty decent starting pitching for the Royals in that kind of traditional fifth starter innings eater role. So, you know, that worked out all right. But yeah, Sanchez on a minor league deal. He reportedly was throwing like 92 to 95. So if you can throw in the mid 90s and you're left-handed, you know, teams are going to find you, and the Royals are going to give him a shot. And, you know, these are both in minor league signings are always in that same kind of vein of, if they work out, great. If not,
right,
well, whatever, you know, you're not doing much. The Royals aren't a team that really use AAA as their huge development spot anyway. That's usually where they kind of stash guys, unless it's someone like Mondesi, Cuthbert, Dozier, Bonifacio, where they're getting their first looks there, or where they're trying to rebuild value or whatever. But for guys like this, it's whatever. It's, you know, they'll go to camp, you see how they throw. If you get anything out of them, great. If you don't, okay, whatever.
Here's your paycheck. Thanks for stopping by.
Yeah, yeah. You have a random picture on picture day from that, and maybe that's it. So that's, you know, those are the two other moves that the Royals kind of did, which they hadn't really jumped on the minor league signing that much, it had seemed. So there could still be some guys out there they might give a shot to in that kind of spot. So, you know, hopefully, you know, lottery tickets, guys to kind of round out the bullpen. Drew Storen, who we talked about a couple weeks ago, he signed with the Reds, so he's off the market. But a lot of the same guys, Feliz, Joe Smith, they're still out there. Who are the guys you brought up?
Let's see. It was
Sergio Romo. He's still out
Sergio
there.
Sergio Romo and Greg Holland.
Greg Holland's still out there, too. Yep. So, you know, there's still a lot of arms out there. And the longer this goes on and the closer you get to spring training, the more the leverage seems to go towards the teams, just because those guys want to get into a camp. They want to pitch, and they'll take a smaller deal if it means that it gets them into a spot where they can prepare and go throw and show that they have that value. And, you know, so that could work to the Royals' advantage, where they're on a tight payroll and, you know, they've got maybe they don't have any wiggle room, but they can squeeze in $2 million for this guy and $2 million for that guy and see what you can come up with. So that's kind of what you look out for over the next few weeks as we kind of get closer to spring training. I mean, I don't know. What are your thoughts on Jonathan Sanchez and the return of the dangerous lover?
The dangerous lover. Yes, the prodigal son himself. You know, it's, I mean, again, I think it's more of the lottery ticket type scenario where you say, hey, you know, he's thrown a no-hitter before. He's had a high level of excellence. That's why we traded for him in the first place. We can get him for essentially free right now. And who knows? You know, maybe he puts some things together and he comes up and he gives you 15 quality innings in the middle of the season in solid relief. You know, like, that can be a big part of the season. You know, a lot of it is kind of, you looked at 2015 and you say, you know, how were the Royals able to sustain such excellence for that whole season? Well, when they had adversity and things come up, they were really able to fill in some of those small gaps really easily in terms of their roster, you know, whether it's Chris Young stepping up or switching roles, whether it's Danny Duffy, you know, switching roles, whatever the case may be, you know, they had that ability to do that. So that can propel your season to, you know, really, really great heights. So, you know, it's, I'm not saying that's what Jonathan Sanchez will end up being, but if there's even that possibility there, then, you know, you're talking minor league contract. I mean, what's a minor league contract? A couple hundred thousand, maybe? I mean, what's he making?
Yeah, I mean, for a veteran, it might be a little bit like that, but it's not going to be much.
No. I mean, if you're a rookie, your minor league contract's like 40,000. So, yeah. I mean, it's nothing for a major league franchise. So I'm, you know, it's one of those things that I'll keep my eye on that more than, you know, the normal minor league signing. He's kind of in that Chris Medlin category where, like, you know, there could be something here, but I'm not holding out my hope. I held out a little hope for Chris
Medlin. You did. You did.
So that was
You're pretty high on him before last season. Yeah. So
we'll say more like kind of like Mike Minor, you know, where it's like, okay.
Right, yeah. Yeah, okay. That's a good example.
I'll I'll keep my ears peeled for, or eyes peeled, ears open for things, for any news on that front, and if he could help the team. But I'm not anticipating great things from Jonathan Sanchez, but it's
no.
there's more of a possibility of great things from him than, say, Sam Lewis next year.
Yeah,
I don't know.
At the big Maybe. League level, yeah, I get reminded of guys like Oliver Perez, who for a while was like highly touted but didn't really do much, and then he kind of, you know, worked his way back and had some productive years as a lefty specialist for a little bit. And even Andrew Miller was a pretty bad pitcher for a while, and then he kind of got it back and got it together. So maybe Sanchez is on that route. Doubt it. He's much older, for one. He's much farther removed from the big leagues, and I can't imagine that the issues that plagued him in the first place are going to be better, namely his walk rate. He just walks a ton. He's just it was so aggravating. But it's a non-zero chance. And if he's the great redemptive story of this year, that'll be really kind of amusing, frankly, to see if that ends up working out in the Royals' favor after he was so dreadful. Not even bad, not even awful. He was dreadful. It was just like the kind of pitcher, when he shows up, you know you've lost that day. That's how bad he was in 2012. And he was crap. I mean, he was crap. It was crap for crap when they made the trade for Guthrie. And
the Royals got a little shine out of theirs.
Right, for about a year and a half. And then Sanchez was, no good. But, you know, wish him the best, because, you know, if he does well, then maybe he's helping the Royals. And it's always an interesting story when those guys kind of come back. So if that happens, awesome. And if not, it'll be kind of funny to look back on it.
Yep. And we can say, remember Jonathan Sanchez? We can all have a nice little laugh.
He certainly probably, right now. He probably can't be much worse than in 2012, but maybe that's just inviting the...
Maybe we'll never say it can't get worse.
Right.
The ghost of Buddy Bell will come back and tell you, hey, Mike, you're wrong,
was worse.
And we'll slap you across the face with a 2+ whip yet again.
I just don't know how do you put so many guys on base?
I know. Jeez.
Like, did they only put eight, like six fielders behind him?
Yeah. Were you, was that the team out on break? Did you miss?
Yeah.
Jeez. Anyway, no better way to end a show than discussion of Jonathan Sanchez, the dangerous
Sanchez.
Lover himself. With that, we will leave you. And, you know, maybe hopefully the Royals keep moving and shaking, making some moves. Maybe, you know, we've given, you know, Mike, to be honest, I mean, we've given the Royals plenty of moves to make between our top three each breakdown of relief pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
And only one of those was crossovers. And one of those, as you mentioned, has signed. So we've got four names
four
still
guys.
Out to you brought up. Not to mention what we talked about tonight, whether it's Matt Adams, Pedro Alvarez. There are moves the Royals can make that make sense for this team. We've given it to them here, so hopefully they can make one of those moves again.
Yep.
And give us some fun stuff to talk about. As the clock turned over to 2017, we're reminded yet again that we are moving ever closer towards that day when pitchers and catchers are reporting. It's a little hard to stay focused on that right now, with the Chiefs being the number two seed in the AFC for the playoffs. So, Mike, I know you're not as big into the footballs, the foosball.
Not as big, but...
As I am, but pretty excited about that.
So I'm rooting for him,
It's always fun, though, because, like, you know, once the... once the Super Bowl is over, then it's only a couple weeks, pitchers and catchers report, and then we're into spring training. Next thing you know, the season's here, and, you know, the Royals are 2017 world champions. That's just
– right.
You know, that's the goal here. So with that, we'll leave you, and we'll be back next week talking more Royals. So thank you so much for listening. We greatly appreciate it. Please don't forget to visit our sponsors both in person at Kelly's Westport Inn and in digital form when going to baseball, bpkansascity.com. Fantastic stuff. There is no off season at bpkansascity.com. We've still got all our great writers working to giving you guys some fantastic content, and it is fantastic. So,
and the Baseball Prospectus annual book is going to be coming out shortly. I don't know the release date on it yet, but it is going to be coming out, and I know a lot of people look forward to that. So that's always a big deal in the baseball world. So you'll want to pay attention to that. And our own Craig Brown from Baseball Prospectus Kansas City has written most of the profiles on the Royals chapter as far as, you know, player profiles. So that's incentive enough right there to go get it when it comes out. And we'll tell you more about that later, and you'll definitely hear about it when on the Twitter as we
on
get closer to that.
The tweet machine. So with that, we will leave you. Thank you all so much for listening. We appreciate it. Be sure to tune in next week. And until then, thanks for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com.